There are two times in our country's history when the government saw the mistreatment of Black Americans as something we could no longer tolerate. The first was after the Civil War. The second was the Civil Rights Movement, both known as Reconstruction. For years, Reverend William Barber has been calling for a third Reconstruction, a sweeping effort from the federal government to dismantle racist policies and structures, to reimagine our society for the betterment of us all. And this idea has gained traction over the last year. Reverend Barber is the co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, president of Repairers of the Breach, and author of the book, The Third Reconstruction, How a Moral Movement is Overcoming the Politics of Division and Fear. And he joins us now by Skype. Reverend Barber, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you so much for having me on today.
Thank you for being here. You know, Reverend, I've heard you say that the real question we need to be asking ourselves is, what is the cost of inequality? And this is the basis for your call for another Reconstruction. Say more.
When we look at where we are today, what is it costing us in America to have 140 million poor and low wealth people in this, the richest nation in the world, in the country today? What is it costing us to have 43% of the nation, Black, white, brown, Asian, indigenous, to be poor and low wealth?
And you say there's not a scarcity of resources, but a scarcity of social justice conscience. Can you explain what you mean?
Yeah, there's not a scarcity of resources or a scarcity of ideas. We know that people either uninsured or underinsured. We have the resources to insure them. And if we insure them, that investment would actually lift America. It would not hurt it any further. We know every time corporations want money, they get the tax cuts, but poor and low wealth people get the short end of the stick, and it's hurting this nation. So there's not a scarcity of resources or a scarcity of ideas. There's a scarcity of political consciousness, the will, and our campaign is saying that stops now with us.
Well, let's talk about what this can look like, because you say this is more than any single bill or agenda or political power. But we are seeing elements of what you're pushing for now with some of the Biden administration's most recent measures taking on systemic ills. Do you think that the administration is getting off to a decent start in what you're asking for?
Sure, it's a better start. And in fact, we met with the policy team of the president before the inauguration. We took 35 people into that meeting, mostly poor and low wealth people, public health specialists, environmentalists, economists, and lawyers. And we laid out what we call a 14-point plan for the healing of the nation. And we argued that you can't heal the nation unless you establish justice. The Constitution says that. So we said healing couldn't just be people being nice in their rhetoric. It had to be a real shift in public policy. Number one, we needed living wages. We needed healthcare for all. We need infrastructure that's targeted toward poor and low wealth communities and infrastructure that addresses climate change. We said we needed restoration of the Voting Rights Act. So when we see those things being put forward in the House and pushed by the president, we are glad to see it. Now, the question, however, is getting them pushed all the way to policy and at a high enough level. We are deeply concerned when there are those that don't even want, for instance, the president's infrastructure bill, and we believe even at the amount that it's at, it's not fully enough.
Well, you're working with Democratic Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal of Washington State and Barbara Lee of California to pass a resolution that would realize at least one goal of the third Reconstruction, which is to end poverty in America. How will it do so?
What is significant about this bill, the resolution, says to Congress and to America, here are the things we must do, all of them, and why. And if we do these kinds of investments, even if it requires some deficit spending, we will benefit more on the back end. We must change how we measure poverty. We must have a living wage. We must have universal health care, earned income tax credit, child tax credit, not on a temporary basis, but on a permanent basis. We have to repeal the Trump tax cuts and make corporations pay their fair share. And if we do this, yes, it would in fact fully address poverty, end poverty and low wages in this country.
You know, you talk a lot about government actions, But what role does the private sector play? I'm asking you this because there's this situation with Walmart. The Employee Safety and Wages Initiative that Walmart just voted against, the company says it wasn't necessary to take on because it already has proper health protocols and offers workers 2 weeks paid leave for COVID-related reasons. What does Walmart's decision indicate for you? And do you think that private companies play a role in what you're pushing for?
Well, it proves to us, again, why we need a reconstruction and why we need a policy shift. We would hope that corporations would just do the right thing because it's smart, it's economically sane to pay your workers a living wage and to make sure they have health care and to make sure they're protected. But if they won't do that, then we need to have federal laws. As Dr. King said, a law may not make you love me, but it could keep you from lynching me, or it can keep you from paying me less than I deserve. But now I will say we have a number of corporations in the restaurant and hospitality arena, and they are joining the call for a $15 minimum wage across the board in this country. It's shameful what Walmart is doing, the amount of money that they're making, because in many cases during this pandemic, the poor and low-wealth people were the first to have to go back to work to help the rest of us, so-called essential workers, but they were the first to get infected, the first to get sick, and the first to die, but they're the last people that are getting relief. We must address this hypocrisy. And so corporations have to recognize it is to your disadvantage to live in a nation where 43% of the people are poor and low wealth, and it's rising. It's economically insane, it's constitutionally inconsistent, and it's morally indefensible.
I want to go back to what we were talking about regarding Congress. You know, one major part of all of this is that it needs bipartisan support, and we're deeply divided right now. I mean, does that concern you?
Well, greatly. And let's just be honest. We've always been deeply divided on these issues. When it comes to addressing systemic racism in all of its forms, we are willing to mobilize in the street and mobilize in the court and mobilize at the ballot box. The division is there because the aristocracy and the ruling class, as Dr. King said, has always feared poor and low wealth people of every race coming together, using their power to vote in a way that changes who gets in office and then changes the economic architecture of this nation. We believe we can change the consciousness of the country. And we know now in 15 states in this country, we did a study with Columbia University, if poor and low wealth people vote between 1 and 25% in 15 states, that vote can fundamentally change who sits in office. And Reconstruction is that as well. It's not just policy. It's a change in political activism and a commitment of the people.
Well, speaking of that, you know, something I was really struck by in your op-ed piece in the New York Times is that you remind us that the generation of kids who watched the case of the shooting death of Trayvon Martin in 2012 are now adults, and and they're the ones who are mobilizing. This week, we've been reflecting on the Tulsa race massacre in which Black people who were able to build wealth and thrive were targeted and killed. In this effort, how do you ensure its longevity?
You know, that is a powerful question, and the question of longevity is both a commitment to the longevity, but we can't wait another 15 or 20 years. This democracy, I believe, will implode. You can't have nearly 50% of your people in poverty and low wealth. The question now for America is not whether Democrats can survive or Republicans survive. Can America be? And so how do we do it? First of all, you have to build from the bottom up, from the states up. Secondly, you have to build fusion coalitions. That means Black and white and brown. You can't have coalitions up, just we're going to fight Black folk over here fighting for voting rights, white people over here fighting against environmental injustice. They all intersect, and we must deal with interlocking injustices with an intersectional moral fusion coalition. And you know, it's working. Last year on June 20th, we were supposed to have a mass poor people's assembly moral march on Washington, and we couldn't because of COVID. So we did it virtually, and 2.7 million people viewed and showed up and said, it is time for this fusion coalition. And guess what? It's always been a fusion coalition. It was Frederick Douglass, who was black, and William Lloyd Garrison, who was white. It was Dr. King, who was black, and it was Jewish rabbis and Viola Woosa and others who were white. That's what is critical in this moment for a long-term fight. But it can't be too long, because if we don't get a handle on the issues of systemic racism, systemic poverty, ecological devastation, denial of health care, and this false moral narrative of white supremacy and religious nationalism, it will undermine this democracy in ways that may not be able to be fixed. The reconstruction must be now.
Reverend William Barber is co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign and president of the Repairers of the Breach. Reverend, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. God bless you. Take care.